Hey everyone, I'm Jason V, and this is Local Color, a Baltimore podcast, putting the spotlight on Baltimore's culture creators. My guest today is Kara Ober, founder of Be More Art. Kara earned her BA in Fine Arts from American University in 1996. In 2005, she received an MFA in painting from the Maryland Institute College of Art after receiving a master's in art education from McDaniel College in 1998. Kara has written articles and art reviews for numerous publications, including Urbanite Magazine, The Baltimore Sun, and the Journal of Surface Design. Another fun fact, Kara was my art teacher in high school. Kara, welcome to Local Color.
Thanks, Jason.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
Cool, cool. Lauren told me that you are going to some type of event or art show. Is it this week or next week?
We're heading to Miami for Art Basel. So on Wednesday.
This coming Wednesday?
This Wednesday. So November the 3rd.
Oh, wait, December the 3rd.
I don't know what day it is.
Yeah. It's about to be December.
That's my life. Yeah, December the 3rd.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's all going?
So I'm traveling with a good friend who runs an art space in Baltimore, Stuart Watson. There's a few other Be More Art contributors who are going to be there. So we're going to be there checking out all the fairs, looking at art, sending reports back to our readers in Baltimore. One thing that I just did that I published today was a Baltimore-centric guide. There's like between 30 and 50 different fairs happening all in Miami and Miami Beach. So I put together a comprehensive list of all the Baltimore artists and galleries who are exhibiting at different venues in Miami, just for people who want to seek them out.
Sounds cool. And also, was it this past weekend or last weekend that you guys launched the magazine launch for Be More Art?
So that was last weekend.
How was that? First off, congratulations.
Thank you.
And second off, how was it?
It was kind of great.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was it held?
We had the event at Maryland Art Place, which is on Saratoga Street in the Bromo Arts District. It's a beautiful venue. It's like a 35-year-old nonprofit art space. Beautiful high ceilings, beautiful gallery. And I've never hosted a huge event. And I think people were really excited about the publication. They were excited to celebrate it and celebrate the arts in Baltimore.
How long has Be More Art been a fixture in the art scene for?
I started it in 2007, and it was a hobby. I started it with some friends that I had finished graduate school with, and at the time there was a lot of art blogs in D.C., but not any in Baltimore,
of
and I felt
not.
Like... Baltimore needed one. So I'd already been writing for a couple of different publications. So I just kind of started it with a friend who, after I, filled out the blogger software and pressed publish, he informed me that he was not a good writer and basically that he was never going to write anything. So I was like, okay.
So you had to do it all by yourself.
It's just me. But I definitely have had a lot of contributors over the years.
Cool. Sounds good. We jumped forward a little bit, but just to indulge myself.
That's what I'm here for.
Because I don't talk about myself that often on the podcast. What was it like being my art teacher?
You are so cute. You are so adorable. Not that you're not adorable now. You're still adorable, but you were much smaller.
What do you mean?
You were 14. So I taught you... in like whatever the intro to art class was, you were a freshman, and obviously you and your sister were some of my favorites.
Oh, thank you.
I had a few, not too many. No, you were just like a cool kid. You were interested in a lot of different things, and you were like had a lot of questions. I mean, you definitely were not like, I don't even know how to say this. I don't know. You weren't like there was a lot of sort of like jocks, Bordeaux kind of boys.
Yeah.
And there were sort of like a lot of like other kind of cool guy, like tough guy, I play basketball. Like you were kind of cool in your own way. You seemed to like do your own thing. And, but you were always kind of like bummed out about something too. So I think my nickname for you was Eeyore, because
yes.
You were always like, oh man.
That's what Lauren told me. She said that I reminded you of Eeyore when I was in your class. To be honest, I think a lot has changed that I'm not as bummed out about stuff as I am anymore, but
no, I don't think so either.
No, it's definitely for the better, but people still, whenever people talk to me on the phone, they always think that I'm depressed or like I'm really sad, and I've tried to work on my energy in my voice, but I just can't. I just can't fake it, you know what I mean? So like when I talk to people, or as I'm talking to you right now, like you can hear the passion and the energy in my voice, but I can't like hey, how are you? I'm so happy to be alive. I'm like, you know, I'm just like,
yeah,
I'm glad that I'm here, but I just wanted to I just wanted to hear somebody else talk about me for once.
You're mellow.
Good word.
You're a mellow kid and a thoughtful kid. And I'm pretty sure, I don't remember, but the one thing I did at Owings Mills when I taught there was I made them start a gay-straight alliance at the school.
Really?
And it was like the teachers didn't know what to make of it. The principal was like really weird about it. But I'm pretty sure I dragged you and your sister to some of these meetings.
I'm sure Lauren went, and if she went and I was around, like, or if she was driving me home, I probably went to a couple.
I think you did. So,
well, so
that was
for
cool.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you from here? Where are you from?
So I grew up in Westminster in Maryland. So it's about 45 minutes north out in Carroll County. And my parents were both teachers. My dad was a professor at Western Maryland College, which is now McDaniel College. He was also the basketball coach. So I spent most of my childhood wearing a green and gold polyester sweatsuit and going to college basketball games, like riding on the team bus. And I thought that was pretty awesome.
Did you ever play basketball?
I had one unfortunate season.
Oh, really? After that, you were like, I'm retired.
Yeah, I think it was like sometime around middle school. I don't think I ever like made a foul shot in the whole season. And I think after that, my coach was just like, listen.
Wait, was your coach your dad?
No.
Oh, I was waiting for that moment where like, your dad was your coach, and he's just like, listen, we're going to call your parents. They're going to come pick you up.
Yeah, like
dad, you're my parent. Oh, well, that's okay. You know, not everyone's good at sports.
And he was very nice about it. I mean, my parents were always supportive. I did play sports in high school. I was like, okay. I did it for the friends, you know, like the team.
Yeah, I understand that. Some of my friends, they played football in high school, and some of them are still friends now, and you don't really get that. You only get that kind of camaraderie if you're in a club or something like that. And looking back, I wish I had done more things, but I never would have been in sports. I would have done like Model UN or the debate team or something like that, because those are the things that now that I'm older and...
Were you in the robot club?
No.
Do you remember Owings Mills had a robot club?
Yeah. I didn't want to be in the robot club, but I did want to be in the chess club, but I wasn't good at chess. Like, all the things that I wanted to participate in, I wasn't really good at. They just interested me. But obviously, if I could go back in time and do it all over again, I would have done it differently. But, you know, I think that...
You can do it now.
Exactly. I'm gonna join my high school chess club now as a 26-year-old.
Maybe there's a grown-up chess club.
No, because those people are probably too like intense and pretentious. Like the people you see at the park playing.
Yeah, some old man in a park. Maybe that would be
exactly. Like I sit down, he's like, "Get up from my table." I can just feel that you're not good enough for
you
me.
You need like a mentor.
It's going to be a movie. It'll be like a chess movie, like a sports movie, but for chess.
Exactly. Okay. You're like the lovable underdog who wins the.
The chess championship?
Yeah, like what is that called? I don't know what even that's called.
They have chess. I don't know if it's as pop. Well, chess is always popular. I don't know exactly what they're called, but they're definitely like you know how there's like the World Series of Poker. They probably have the same thing for chess. I just don't know the name of it. So I'm sure someone out there is going to email me and correct me and tell me how dumb I am. But that's okay.
It's part of the fun.
Exactly. So. What interested you in painting and art? Did you always want to be an artist, or did you have other career aspirations in mind?
No, I always wanted to be an artist. For me, the hard part was growing up in a place where I didn't know anyone who was an artist. I mean, there was maybe like the one weird neighbor who, like, you know, had like a fake name and hung their stuff in a restaurant. But that wasn't, I didn't know any like real artists who were making their living. And I think as a result, you know, parents want to be helpful. They want to steer their kids into, you know, safe places to go. So I think that's how I ended up in teaching for a while. My parents were both teachers, and I sort of just didn't know how to be an artist. It took me a long time to figure it out.
What do you mean by you didn't know how to be an artist?
So after college, I did major in art in college, and I knew like the next step was getting your MFA. We had hung out with the grad students at AU where I went to college, and my professors were kind of like not very encouraging. Like, they sort of were just like, you know, see ya. I had one that wrote a letter of recommendation for me for graduate school, but the rest were kind of like, oh, I'm too busy, sorry. Like, you don't want to do that anyway because there's no jobs. And I think, you know, knowing someone who is successfully doing the things you want to do and spending time with them and asking them questions, I mean, it's almost like having a mentorship or like an internship in a way. I think that would have been very helpful for me. And as a result, I think starting the blog allowed me to reach out to those people and have a reason to reach out to them and gave them a reason to say yes. And then I got to ask them all sorts of nosy questions that I then was like, oh, I can do it this way. I have these options. Oh, like that's how you ended up getting from point A to point B.
Right.
When I started out, I just saw myself sort of on this island of point A, and I saw point B like somewhere out
I'm
in the distance.
To interrupt. Could you either, yeah, like you don't have to lean directly into it.
I don't have to eat it.
No, you don't. But yeah, just like
too far.
Because does that chair turn?
Yeah.
Yeah, so just turn so you're facing it. You don't have to be like you don't have to be right directly on it. But as long as you're facing it.
Okay. I feel like I should be looking at you.
Yeah, if you want to do that, that's fine. just
fine.
Yeah, I guess just try to find a way where we can have the best of both worlds. Okay, yeah, that's good.
Is this okay?
Yeah. Are you going to be okay? Like, do you need to? I don't want you to hurt your back. Okay. Okay.
Well, I'm old, but I'm not that old.
I wasn't saying it like that. I just wanted to make sure you're okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm good.
You're saying you didn't really know how to be an artist, and starting the blog allowed you to kind of talk to those artists and figure out what they did to get where they are. Is that right?
Exactly. I mean, I think it's very awkward to like go to a reception or go to an opening and like. I mean, I have these weird conversations now where people come up to me and they're like, hi, I know who you are. I like what you do. Can you come to my studio tomorrow? And I'm just like, I'm kind of busy. I have a kid and, you know, my schedule is pretty tight. Nice to meet you. Like, it's awkward. So, I mean, having a publication that people are actually reading, you know, you can send the email and say, this is the publication, and it sort of vets you and people know you're not like a psychopath. And then when you say, you know, I would like to sit down with you. Do you want to have coffee or do you want to do this interview or a studio visit? Then people are pretty generous and open about what works for them and sort of sharing their strategies. I think for a long time, I mean, the arts can be a really hard place to find success. So I think for a long time, it was sort of an old school practice to not share how you got to point A to point B. And like I can remember even in grad school at MICA sort of asking these nosy questions about how did you get your work here? Like, how did you get to this point? And people just being like, oh, don't worry about it. Just keep making your art and it'll all work out.
It'll happen eventually. Yeah, I've noticed that.
And that's total bullshit.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you do have to keep making your work, and that is the most important thing, but success doesn't happen by accident, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in my experience with the podcast, there's plenty of people who haven't responded to me when I've asked them for an interview, but the people that have, going back to what you were saying, they've been very willing and accommodating to trying to fit things into their schedule. And then when you were speaking about asking artists nosy questions and how they got from point A to point B, I see that a lot as well. It's like I guess nowadays for people, you know, in my age group or I guess my generation, instead of asking people, it's like you find someone that you like and then you just go on their Wikipedia page and you just read everything that they did like 10 million times. And you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, they were kind of poor in their mid-20s and I'm poor in my mid-20s. So I guess I'm doing the right thing, right? It's just like if I'm still poor and I'm 35, then I messed up, right? But as you said, you know, success doesn't happen overnight or it doesn't really come easy. And I think that's where – that's like what they don't tell you is that they'll tell you, oh, so-and-so did this, they did that, they worked here, they faced this hardship, and now they're successful. But they don't tell you what exactly went into making those decisions. It's kind of like on Facebook, you only see people's lives the way they want you to see them. It's like just the highlight reel. You know, it's like, oh, like cool, look at these pictures. I went on vacation, but I got food poisoning. And you don't see those pictures, you know.
It's
what
all
I mean?
Like, I'm so blessed.
Exactly. Like,
and then you want to just punch him in the face.
Right, because you're like, I feel like I'm not blessed.
Not like that.
Exactly. And then that's also when you start to really take stock in the things that you have. Like, of course, everybody wishes they had more money, but, you know, I'm just glad that I'm able to afford my apartment and eat food and try to create the things that I want to create. But I'm sorry, we keep on getting off topic.
No, it's good. It's good. But I think you're right. I think for a long time it was important that, I mean, in most careers, but in the arts in particular, you had to cultivate this aura of success. Like if I want people to buy into what I'm doing, I have to make it seem like I'm doing all this awesome stuff and it just happened because it was meant to be. And I think that's really disingenuous. And I think it sort of, it doesn't uplift everybody. It sort of like pushes other people down. It might feel like it's pushing you up, but I think actually the opposite is true. Like when everybody's doing better, there's actually more resources and more excitement and more camaraderie. And instead of like this attitude of like scarcity, there's not enough funding or not enough galleries to show all the art. There's just an infinite amount of possibilities if you're willing to create them yourself.
Exactly. I understand. So you're talking about basically artists helping one another succeed instead of being so closed off from one another. Do you think you have seen Baltimore's art scene change from that, from like a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset? Like how in your experience in travels and with Be More Art and stuff, how has the art scene changed over the last 5 years?
I've been in Baltimore for 15 at this point, and I mean at this point I'm not exhibiting my work a whole lot. For a while there I was, especially right out of graduate school, and I don't know, in some ways it stayed the same. I mean, it's a very young scene, I think, because MICA and other area colleges keep, graduating hundreds of new young artists that have a ton of energy and really good work when they finish their undergrad or their graduate programs. And I think more people are starting to stay here, which is good. It used to be they would tell you that, you know, the only way to be a successful artist would be to move to New York. And I don't think that's true. And I don't think that's something they're sort of pushing on students anymore. Just because New York is so ridiculously expensive. But, you know, it's still a challenge. And like, the older I get, it can be frustrating. Because for when you're 23 and you don't have a family and your bills are not that high and you can live with roommates and, you know, never sleep and drink your face off and go out every night. All these opportunities for social and professional and networking and crazy ass projects abound. And, as you get older, you're looking for a little bit more security. You're looking for maybe a job that pays you.
That gives you health insurance.
Yeah. And that is still a challenge, I think, in this city for creative people. I mean, there are jobs in the nonprofits, there's jobs in education and health in Baltimore, and it seems like the creative population is starting more and more to become entrepreneurs and selling their own products and like the local food movement, it seems like people seem more and more excited about buying locally made beautiful things and interesting things. So, you know, in making this new magazine, I feel like I'm sort of counting on that to be true. I think that it is. And I think there's a real hunger for, you know, lovingly made, just well-made, locally made,
authentic
stuff.
Things.
Yeah.
You mentioned before Station North and Micah graduating a lot of new artists that are flooding the scene with their work, and how that can hopefully, I guess, raise Baltimore's reputation as an artist city, or show people that there's more to Baltimore than an HBO show that came out almost 10 years ago. So we won't talk about that.
It's a really good show, though.
Oh, I've watched it 3 times.
I love it.
I love it, too. But like when I travel and tell people where I'm from, it gets a little annoying, because there are so many other things that Baltimore has to offer. But I mean, I'm not mad at it. You're talking about Station North and Micah. Do you believe that that area will be gentrified to make way for Micah's expansion? And do you believe that that area kind of needs to be gentrified in order for Station North to realize its full potential?
I mean, I think the word gentrify is really problematic. I'm not even sure if I completely understand what that word means. I think it can mean different things to different people. You know, some people are super excited about the things that are happening in Station North and the Bromo District. I think in particular, as of late, there's a ton of new development and businesses, and some of it's art related, some of it's not. And then there are there's problems when the people who have already been living there are getting pushed out. So it's like, we don't want to just get rid of our local culture that's part of, you know, why we want to live here. But at the same time, if we can make this city more productive, more safe, more accessible to all kinds of different people, I think that's a good thing. But, you know, again, this is why I think artists sort of need to be involved in this process and have a seat at the table when economic decisions are being made, when sort of larger development at this point, like, that's not really happening. I don't see that happening, but people are talking about making that happening. And again, that's sort of why, after doing this online publication for 8 years, we decided to make our first print magazine, just because I felt that the print could actually go places that the online doesn't, and hopefully, you know, present Baltimore as a city of artists, present Baltimore as sort of an amazing place to live, and show a real variety of people who are living interesting and creative lives here, you know, because they're here. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Do you think that they unfairly leave out the arts? Do you feel like art is an important aspect of society?
Oh, completely. I mean, I think liberal arts education makes sense. I know at this point, college has gotten so ridiculously expensive that people are reacting against that price tag, and they sort of feel like, well, if I'm going to invest this, you know, crushing amount of money and go into debt for, you know, basically the rest of my life, like, I need to get something tangible out of this, aka a career. But I don't think that's what college is. I don't think that's what it's supposed to be. I mean, I think it's supposed to be an experience that teaches us all to be, you know, better people, more interesting people, more empathetic people. And I don't think that you get that. You get that from the arts. And by the arts, I mean literature, I mean music, I mean dance, I mean visual arts. All those fields really teach people how to think. And I think it's essential. I think it teaches you how to think outside of, you know, the normal, you know, the normal boundaries that exist. And I mean, there's definitely a lot of people that say, like, oh, Baltimore City Schools cut back on their art. They're trying to just create people to be, you know, robots or something. And I don't think it's sort of a nefarious plot to brainwash people, but I do think it's unfortunate, and I do think it's necessary.
Do you think the trajectory with the way things are going is like people will be so invested in going to business school or being an engineer or an astronaut or something like that, that there will be a kind of a need for liberal arts educated individuals and artists? Because, you know, let's say 50 years from now, if everybody is just a...
If we're all astronauts.
Yes, like if we're all astronauts and engineers, you know, so like some astronaut's going to need someone to design their business card.
Supposedly, businesses claim that the number one characteristic they're looking to hire are people who are creative thinkers, people who are creative problem solvers.
That's
what they say. And then beyond that, I really do think, you know, in terms of design, I mean, if we look around, every single thing that we touch, wear, see, experience, drive, sit on, I mean, it's all been designed by someone. So I think industrial design is a real interesting place to go. So I think, I mean, there's all these sort of hidden things, like hidden jobs or hidden ways to, I don't know, put your mark on the world. And I think we're becoming more and more aware of these things, whereas in the past, maybe it was just something we took for granted, or maybe we were just surrounded by really ugly, badly designed shit. But now people seem to have a desire to be, I mean, having a beautiful environment is important, right? I mean, countless like psychological studies have proven this. Like if your school or your environment or your home is beautiful, you know, you're going to be a happier person. You're going to be a more productive person. Having beauty in your life is essential.
Important.
Yeah.
What does art do for you?
I don't know. I mean, I guess the simple answer would be it makes me happy. It distracts me from my own self in a way that, I mean, I think of art more as an activity or a process as opposed to like a thing. You know, once it's done, once it's made, whether it's a painting or a print or a magazine or a blog post, it's sort of not yours anymore. It's not dead, but it's sort of, like it fulfills its purpose out in the world. And I, you know, the artist doesn't really have that much to do with that anymore. Like once it's done, it goes out in the world and people can react to it. They can share it. They can buy it. It might take on a completely different meaning than the artist ever intended. It might be misunderstood. It might be thrown in the garbage. It might be worshipped. You just don't know. Like it has a life of its own. But for me, like, art in my own life, it is really a process where I can just get lost in thinking about something and getting really excited about something. And for me, it can be writing, it can be painting, it can be cutting up magazines and gluing them back together. It could be like meeting with people, even making plans to do some crazy project. But I like that. Once I'm in the act of doing, I kind of don't have to think about myself too much. Like, I don't have to sit there and think like, oh, will this be good? Will this suck? Should I bother? No. Like, I'm just doing it.
Once you get in that flow state, you're like...
It's positive,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's like an energized focus, and you're like, you know, it doesn't matter if this is good or bad right now. All I know is that I feel good doing it.
Yeah.
That's good. So what's the future of the Baltimore art scene looking like, if you're able to answer that? What do you think is going to happen 5 years from now?
That's a good question. I mean, I hope, and this is like something I talk about often, but I hope that more and more artists will buy property in Baltimore. There's so many stories about artists in New York and artists in Brooklyn, and they come into an area that most people don't want to live in or work in. They settle there. They put galleries there, studios. Like, it starts to become cool. People are attracted to these parts of town all of a sudden that are revitalized through the arts. And then some developer comes in and pushes them out. I mean, like, it's a cliche, but it's true. And it happens all the time. And artists are, like, surprised by it. So... there's this part of Brooklyn called Gowanus, and it's on this canal that smells horrible. It smells so disgusting. And artists pick this area because they're like, no one's ever going to take it away from us. It is so gross here. And like, they're all getting pushed out right now. And, you know, Baltimore has some similarities with, you know, with that analogy. So as more and more people are seeing value in Baltimore and more people are investing, you know, if you own the building, they can't push you out. So I don't think homeownership is like a sexy thing for young artists. Supposedly your generation is all about renting. No one wants to buy. But the rents in Baltimore are going way up.
Really?
Yeah, especially around colleges. But the rents are getting higher and higher, yet our population numbers are staying the same, right? We still have the same amount of vacant buildings. We still have the same amount of blight. But, you know, like, why are the rents going up? Because, you know, people will pay more for certain areas. So I would like to see artists buy, whether it's a house, whether it's a warehouse, an art space, and having that narrative and kind of showing people how to do that is something I'm really interested in. Because I think then you can really like be established here. You've committed to this city, but you also have that resource of owning your own place that can actually generate income for you if you're an artist who, you know, it's like whatever our day job is, I advocate, you know, picking whatever will pay you the most for the least amount of hours of work, right?
Right.
So then you have more time to work on your real art. So, I mean, owning a place, renting out a couple of the bedrooms, having income every month just for living seems kind of like a no-brainer.
Getting back to what you're saying about artists being surprised when they settle and make an area popular and then being pushed out, I think that's one thing that creative types and artists don't, it's something that they don't consider, because in their mind it's just like, in a perfect world, this stuff doesn't, like, all I need to do is create for me to be able to sustain myself. But when those things happen, you're kind of brought back to reality, like this is real life, things like this happen. And as you said, if you own something, people can't take it away from you unless you are willing to sell it. But then even when you're willing to sell it, I mean, you're profiting from that. So you think the future will be artists owning things and being able to establish themselves as a serious economic driving force for the city?
I hope so. I mean, I've been hearing more and more conversations that relate to this. I actually just did an interview with Ryan Dorsey, who's running for city council in Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know
yeah.
him?
I've heard
yeah.
of him.
Yeah. And so we sort of had that conversation. He self-identifies as an artist. He's a musician. And so he's sort of advancing that conversation as well, I think, in an interesting way. The other thing that I'm hoping that we see in Baltimore, and it seems like in a small way we are moving forward, but this whole idea of Baltimore being two separate cities and people kind of just going about their business, living their lives, those two Baltimores not really, you know, meeting each other all that often. You know, hopefully what has happened here in the past few months will continue to advance that conversation and have people talking about that and creating opportunities for you know, just different people to get together and do projects together. And I think the arts are an amazing way to, you know, get to know someone, you know, regardless of where you come from, how much money you have. I think, you know, regardless of, you know, whoever's idea of artistic merit and what's good or what's not, I think the arts are this amazing vehicle to bring people together. So I think that's going to be a key part of Baltimore in moving things forward in a positive way.
What's next for Be More Art? When's the next issue coming out?
So our plan is to put out two magazines a year, so a biannual publication. And so we're hoping issue two will be out in April. That's our plan. Issue one was grant funded, and it doesn't have any advertising. For issue two, our plan is to open it up to some special advertising entities. We want it to remain a beautiful object We want it to maintain its integrity, both aesthetically and in its content. But I'm very curious to see whether or not Baltimore will support what we're doing. It seems like there's a need for it. It seems like there's a lot of energy towards it. But as someone coming into this business, as you know, with a background in the arts, completely separate from business, it'll be interesting to see whether or not Baltimore gets behind this and that we can keep doing it. So I hope that we can.
Do you guys have any events coming up? Any happy hours? I've only been to one, but I'd like to come to more.
Well, so next week I'm going to be taking magazines to Art Basel, Miami. So Be More Art's going to participate in three different events in Miami. One is at the Rubel Family Collection, which is a museum. We'll be selling magazines in their bookstore. One is at the Betsy Hotel, and it's an event organized by Dr. Leslie King Hammond. And it'll feature the photographer Christopher Metzger, who was behind the Black Lives Matter on the Open Works, that mural project. And then we're also a media sponsor at Prism Art Fair, and we'll have magazines there. So I'm like, that's huge. And I kind of can't even think beyond next week. But we are looking at our annual Christmas party. So I will be working with our team on that. And but yeah, we do typically we do a monthly happy hour, and we kind of rove to different spots in Baltimore.
How's your son doing?
He is so all about Christmas. My house is like Christmas barfed all over my house.
Did you guys decorate the outside or just the inside?
Oh my God, everything. Oh, everything. Really? My husband and my son call me the Grinch. Because I'm like, can we please temper this a little bit? Like,
oh,
my house is
so you're just like
small.
Me.
And
right.
Like, do we have to, every surface, does it have to be covered? So, yeah, my son got up on Christmas or on Thanksgiving morning at 7 a.m. He's like, okay, we're putting up the Christmas tree.
Wow.
And my husband was like, okay. And I was like, all right, I'm going back to bed. I'll see you guys in a couple of hours. I'm going to sleep. And by the time I got up, the Christmas tree was up.
Yeah.
Man, they are hardcore Christmas at my house.
Well, at least they're handling it, because then you can just step away and do your own thing.
Christmas is really fun when you're five.
I can imagine.
It's very, very exciting.
You sound very excited.
I know. I'm working on it.
It's okay. I'm the same way. That guy, Lauren, asked me, like, are you going to decorate? And I said, no, I'm not going to decorate. I'll help decorate.
Yeah.
But I'm not doing that. Okay. So I'm just...
Got a little... He's dying.
Oh, this is the last episode. I'm dying. I want to thank Kara for sitting down with me today. To learn more about Be More Art, head over to bemoreart.com. There you can look at photos of their magazine release party and order a copy of their first issue. Is that true?
That is true.
Okay, cool. That's true. You can order a copy of their first issue. You can also find Be More Art on Instagram at Be More Art. Follow Local Color on Instagram at Local Color ABP. Follow us on Twitter at Local Color 410 and like us on Facebook. Until next time, I'm Jason V, and this is Local Color. Good
Yay.
Job. You did good.